Nathan Noy. Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants. Foot soles and beer. Making the tears rain down like a monsoon. Listen to the bass go boom, explosion. All right, somebody else who is aggrieved on the subject of one LeBron James, a fellow longtime Cavs fan and original FDH Lounge dignitary, our good friend Nate Noy. He joins our Irish wake here tonight for the LeBron era. Good to have you on, Nate. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Rick. I think LL Cool J and I are both happy because the FCC listed the restriction on swearing today. And if I'm going to talk about LeBron, I'll hold back on dropping some F-bombs, but I certainly did that off air.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. You know, we just spent the previous segment kind of looking back at the last week. We're starting to look ahead now to matters of legacy and everything like that. I want to put this out there to you guys, a couple points that I know I've made off air, but these are points that I don't think have been sufficiently made in the media to people. Again, Jason touched lightly in the previous subject on LeBron having run from the historic burden. And I'll grant you, rarely has a megastar in sports had the kind of burden that he has, because there's never been a city like Cleveland dating back to 1964 without a major championship in any of the major sports. So, that having been said, though, he on his resume, it will be judged that he and his greatness, and I still think he's the best player in the league, and is a deserving two-time MVP for whatever I think of him personally now. He couldn't get the job done. He ran from that burden. Additionally, as Dan Gilbert said, and he might have been a little overheated in it, I'm still not 100% convinced he quit in the Boston series. I think the frustration got the better of him. I don't think he channeled things properly, but a lot of people do think he quit. A megastar has not had anything like that. There's nothing like that attached to Jordan or even to Barkley, Stockton, Malone, and the guys who didn't get it done. Patrick Ewing doesn't have something like that on his record, and he came up short. So LeBron, even after he wins championships as part of a collective, gets it done, and that goes also to what Jason said, too. I've said the last couple of years about Boston. I said I was nauseated in the playoffs this year. The heart of a champion, the heart of a champion. I said they gravy train off each other. KG couldn't do anything as the main guy, neither could Allen, and neither could Pierce. Together, they collectively gravy trained one another. They were great enough in terms of skills that they didn't have the burden. Gee whiz, that's these guys times infinity down in Miami as far as them gravy training off of one another. At least Wade's gotten it done. But LeBron is very instructive. For most of Thursday night into Friday morning, I stayed up late tracking the news stuff, hanging out on Twitter, putting up stuff, whatever. For several hours on end on Twitter, Scottie Pippen was the number one trending topic on Twitter because people spontaneously all over the world were comparing LeBron to Scottie Pippen for his decision. The major media has not touched on this. CNET.com had a brief little mention on their site. That, to me, that shows the media and their technological ignorance of Twitter and what it allows. Trending topics on Twitter, that is a real-time measure of conversation all over the world, the likes of which we've never had in human history. It's very significant to me. Just like, look, if Michael Jordan were number one on Twitter, that would be something. It would be good for LeBron, but it would be, OMG, he's the next Michael Jordan. Look, if it had been good news for LeBron, it would have been newsworthy. But the fact of LeBron spontaneously being compared to Scottie Pippen all over the world, such that more people are talking about Scottie Pippen than any other topic, how the hell does that not get covered? It's amazing. This is the legacy. We have seen somebody on a glide path of becoming the greatest player of all time throw it away irretrievably. The only way he's the greatest player of all time at this point, and I don't mean to trivialize human life, but if Dwayne Wade gets hit by a bus and they go on to win a bunch of titles with just LeBron and Bosch, then LeBron is the greatest player of all time. Aside from that, no, it is thrown away irretrievably. I'll start with you on this, Jason, because you started to make the point the previous segment here. Again, the magnitude of what he threw away to make this decision in terms of his place in history, the fact that he is now universally regarded as being Scottie Pippen and a sidekick. I mean, he's still better than Wade. He's still the best player on that team, not by much. But in terms of not wanting to be a leader and taking the easy way out, these things, Jason, they've been overshadowed by loyalty, disloyalty, hate, love. There's not much love. It's only coming from the front runners in Miami. But when you look at the basketball part of this and matters of legacy and history, it is extraordinary, Jason.
No, it absolutely is. And, you know, my biggest thought here is, again, dating back to the what I was saying before about what if it doesn't work and they don't win titles regardless of who's on the team, then doesn't LeBron James become no greater on the hierarchy of NBA all-time greats as Dominique Wilkins? I mean, statistically, he's still better, but people always look back and say, yeah, that guy was really fun to watch, but so what? And that's basically what it'll come down to, and what he and then the rest of the world is failing to realize because they're looking no farther than next year and maybe the year after that is, what happens when he's 5 years removed from his last game and he's looking at getting into the Hall of Fame? And I'm not doubting that he'll get in and get in right away, but people will make the claims and have the discussion around the idea that, yeah, he was a great player, but there will always be a but. And if you want to be in that level, if his legacy was to stay intact and for him to be mentioned among the people we consider to be the greatest of all time, the Jordans, the Bill Russells, and so on, he had to do it a certain way. And he didn't do it that way, and there's no going backwards. So I absolutely think the legacy's absolutely in the toilet. I think if he wins 8 titles, he still cannot weasel his way into being considered one of the top 5 players of all time anymore.
No,
is gone and gone forever.
Yeah.
Now, maybe he'll look back on that and feel bad about it or wish he hadn't done it the way he did. But I think at this point, all he can possibly look at is if they win a title, they can't say he didn't win one. And I think it's sort of playing Marty ball with your legacy, playing to not lose. And I think it's wrong. I think it's made a terrible mistake.
Yeah, and it goes to questions of killer instinct and the things that had been questioned about him, I thought unfairly up until this point. Nate, I know these things have got to be resonating with you because, you know, you're a student of history. You and I have spent countless hours off air talking about stuff. One of the earlier things in our friendship we bonded over was discovering that the other one was a Jimmy Fox mark of all things here. So I know you're looking at this from the history lens and you got to be drawing some similar conclusions.
Oh, absolutely, Rick. And I mean, not only his legacy has, you know, virtually no chance now of ever being top 5, but his brand in the short term is virtually destroyed as well. I'm not sure how much he touched on that in the last 40 minutes or so, but, you know, just an anecdotal example of that. I have a friend that lives in Toledo, longtime Pistons fan, never liked the Cavs, said to me after this went down that he'd never disliked LeBron, but after what LeBron just did, he totally hates LeBron. And, you know, what happened to LeBron when he went to Melo's wedding over the weekend, fans booing him. I mean, his brand's completely just gone. I mean, there are more people out there that can't stand LeBron now than like him. And, you know, 2 weeks ago to think that could have happened to LeBron James was unthinkable. But he sure found a way to do it, you know. So now he goes down, you know, in history as somebody that was a gun for hire. It didn't matter. I mean, he didn't do it on his own. He'll never be able to say, yeah, I did it. I was the greatest. He'll always have to share whatever accomplishments he has in the next 4 years with, you know, with Wade. I mean, Chris Bosh is kind of the total gravy trainer in this. He's a good player, but certainly not top 50, never will be. And as you and I talked about off there as well, you know, this gives Kobe a chance for, you know, Kobe's just hoping to see the Heat a couple times in the finals the next couple years because, you know, as you and I said, you know, if Kobe can beat this team, you know, that legitimizes him as maybe one of the top 5 players of all time. So LeBron will never catch Kobe. LeBron has to have Wade go down or retire earlier than him to catch Wade. I mean, it just isn't going to happen. These guys now have position on him he can't make up ever with this decision.
No, it's amazing the things there, and it's funny, and Jason and I talked about this a little bit off air as well. When you look at everything about this as far as undeserved beneficiaries of good fortune, Kobe Bryant got to be top of the list. Jason had just done a column recently at the FDHLounge.com about Kobe's place in history and what if he ties or passes Michael for titles. And again, I don't like the way that the sports writers and these some of these pseudo historians rate guys and the criteria that they use. A lot of it's kind of sketchy to me. But there's going to be a criterion used for Kobe Bryant if he wins a title and beats these guys, which in the near term is still relatively likely because, you know, Miami's going to have to prove they can match up to the Lakers in the post after all. But yeah, and that's, you know, right now Z is looking like your best option at center, and I love Z. I can't root for him to win a title, but I still love Z, but come on, he's seen better days. But anyways, be that as it may, Lakers got to be favored in the short term to stop these guys. And the sports writers will all be like, OMG, Kobe saved basketball from the evil Miami trio. Kobe gets a big thing in the greatest of all time argument that just fell into his lap. I mean, a week ago here, it's, oh, man, he might get passed by LeBron. LeBron's going to put himself in position to build on his legacy. LeBron flushed his and in one fell swoop put it in Kobe's lap. I just want to put this out there, brief conspiracy theory here. Michael Jordan was somebody who Pat Riley used as a go-between on this stuff. Before Jordan became the majority owner of Charlotte, Riley used Jordan to be a little bit of a mentor to LeBron briefly over this past season here. I don't know if Jordan knew what he was doing, that he was doing Riley's bidding in terms of the tampering or not, but Riley set up some sit downs and LeBron was grateful for that. That's when LeBron had his big, you know, oh, I'm going to retire number 23 should be retired like the Heat did, and I'm going to take number 6 next year. Michael Jordan, if he knew what he was doing in steering LeBron, you know, wittingly or unwittingly to Miami, I'm going to take LeBron out of the way. LeBron can't pass me. If Jordan was engaging in a little bit of shenanigans there for the history books, he screwed himself because now Kobe will be on his jock for number one in a way that he never could have been otherwise. I don't know. But, Jason, give me your thoughts on this and how Kobe benefits from all of this in a way that he doesn't even necessarily deserve. He's in the right place at the right time.
Well, again, when we talk about the legacy, ultimately it all comes down to how people remember things. And people are going to remember that Kobe was taunted with the prospect of leaving and going to the Clippers or the Bulls or whoever, and ultimately came back to the Lakers, and without Shaq, I was able to win one. Now, semantics being what they are, we can sit here and argue that Pau Gasol is as much to blame for their success as he is, but point is still valid in that people are going to look back and say Kobe did it the right way, and that's going to go a long way. Now, my big issue with all of this comes back to the idea that I am almost dead on sure that if, let's just say hypothetically, the Heat played the Lakers this year, Heat are not bringing the hardware home. And I go as far as to say I believe that would probably be the case if it happened the following year.
Right.
When you look back at all the teams that have won titles over time, it's not just star players and other players. There's a whole thing that goes with it. So you have to have the star player, the role players that rebound and block shots. You need the guys that come off the bench and play solid defense on the best guard of the opposing team. There are levels that go with this, and I just don't see how the way they've gone about it is going to render the results that they want. And even if they do, Kobe's still going to come out looking better in the end. So regardless of hardware, regardless of any statistical measure, as you put it, Rick, Kobe's in a position to sort of sit comfortably and receive more praise in a contrasting way without even doing anything differently. People have far forgotten Eagle Colorado by now because, comparatively speaking, Kobe probably can do no wrong because, in essence, as the older, more responsible young man, he's doing it the right way, and that's what people will remember.
I will very responsibly forego the LeBron raped an entire metropolitan area comeback on that one there about Eagle Colorado. I won't go there.
And he did it on national TV. LeBron's got one up on Kobe.
yeah, exactly. But, I mean, you know, Nate, what about that? I mean, Kobe all of a sudden, You know, he can get the seven titles. I think there's a path to get there. Now, again, as we've said, these guys that skipped high school, okay, Kobe's an older 31 than he would be otherwise. KG's old for his age. LeBron is going to be old for his age in another 3, 4, 5 years, whatever. Kobe's window isn't as long as some people might think it is, but in the short term, it's pretty strong. And again, I mean, he gets the six titles, he gets the seven titles. If he holds off these guys winning it or stops them from winning altogether, I mean, you know, he could go past Jordan on a rocket here. It just in terms of criteria of how we look at stuff, and I've already, and I don't endorse that criteria. I still think I'm going to go Big O. I'm old school. Average the triple double for a season, Big O. I think he's the greatest of all time. I don't see myself changing my opinion on that. But by the modern criteria used, if Kobe is the triad stopper, if you will, he could shoot past Jordan.
Oh, I agree with that. You know, the other thing I think about when we talk about championships in the NBA, Rick, is coaching. And in the last 20 years, I think we're in a single digit for number of coaches that have won an NBA title. I mean, just think about the runs Phil Jackson's had, how many rings he has. And, you know, if you don't have one of those totally elite coaches, how even win a title, you know? And unless Pat Riley takes the bench down to Miami, LeBron's not going to have that. So, I mean, that's another factor. How long is Phil going to stay, and how many more titles will he win there? You know, LeBron's going to need – that team's still going to need a guy that can make all the right moves to win an NBA championship. It's not as easy as having the best talent. We've seen that in a few different teams throughout the years.
And, right.
You know, I'm still one of those people. I'm going to be rooting to see the Heat get beat in the Eastern Conference. I don't want to see them in the finals against Kobe. I want to get them – and I want to see them gone before that time, and let's hope that happens the next few years.
Exactly, exactly. To wrap this, before we take our break and go into the soccer segment here, I'm going to ask you guys just for some collective thoughts on what we can expect to see from Miami in terms of, first of all, expectations on record. I'm going to go a little lower than some people just because they're in the toughest division in the East. They're going to have, I think it's 12 games with Orlando and Atlanta, and a deep team like Atlanta is going to be a nightmare for them. If they played everybody in the East equally, I'd say maybe 65, 66 wins. As it is now, I'm going to go a little lower than most people and say about 58. 60 to 62 seems to be the minimum I'm seeing elsewhere. I say 58. My prediction is that you're not going to see the big three on the floor very much at the same time. Because, you know, beginning of game, end of game, you know, towards halftime, other spots. But you're going to see long stretches just because, again, they're going to be too vulnerable when they're not on the floor. Yeah, they're going to have Mike Miller, but, you know, Jason said before, they might be deeper than we think. I don't think they're going to be that much deeper than we think. I think they're going to be super vulnerable at times when there might only be one of them on the floor and maybe could get double teamed still. So I'm looking at that. My expectation for the next couple of years, I'm going to say two titles. I think they have enough to get that. I think you have to be deeper than they're going to be in order to win more than that. So those are some of my general thoughts. Two titles, 58 wins next year, and just that, again, it's overblown how much we're expecting to see the three of them on the floor at the same time. They'll be unstoppable when that happens because you can't hardly play any of the three man up. So they'll be unstoppable, but it'll be unsustainable to do that because it'll mean benching them at the same time, and they'll get blown off the floor when that happens. So those are some of my thoughts. Jason, general thoughts and predictions for that bunch going forward.
Well, I think right off the bat, they don't win one in 2010, 2011.
Right.
I think that's just about automatic. And furthermore, I want to go and look at this, and let's assume that they do win 55 to 60 games. And that's just the wheelhouse they're in as far as wins and losses go. It seems to me very clear that they may not ever win one until the current Laker team is dismantled. And, again, looking at this from a perspective of actual analysis, if you look at the matchups, Kobe on Wade, Artest on LeBron, and Gasol on Bosch, even if that is what they're trying to do in a final setting, felt confident in what the Lakers would do. So I think it's going to be very difficult for them to win. I don't think that you can make one of these super teams and look at it on paper and say that we should win every time because we have, you know, X, Y, and Z. I think there's more chemistry and team building that has to happen that it clearly has not. In 5 years, I think they'll be lucky to win one. If they decide as they get into their early to mid-30s, they want to keep this thing going, maybe they improve on that. But there are a lot of people out there that think that these moves have basically supplanted titles in that Miami Heat building, and I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't think that they win one in the first 2 to 3 years. I think it's going to take a while. I think they're going to take their lumps. We're going to find out, and this is the important part, we're going to find out who's willing to take a back seat. Because, Rick, as you mentioned, and when this first happened, who gets introduced last?
Yep.
And who has or does not have a problem with that? I think Bosch is going to get really upset when he doesn't get his touches. And I think there's going to be times when there's going to have to be a give and take between LeBron and Wade as far as who takes the last shot, who runs the isolations. I think there's a huge problem here. Anybody that's lived with a good friend for a long period of time knows eventually it just gets old. So I fear for what they're doing. I hope they know what they're doing, but I think there is far more to see, and they haven't won anything yet.
Well, not only that, and I'll mention this before I throw it to Nate. You talk about playing roles here. We already heard when in terms of Bosch coming to Cleveland, oh, I don't want to have to play the five. We already know LeBron doesn't like playing the four for long stretches and getting beat up down on the blocks. They want to match up against the Lakers' bigs. They're going to have those guys logging some serious minutes at the four and a five just to neutralize the Lakers on the other end of the floor. We'll see how well that goes over when push comes to shove on that. So, Nate, your thoughts, your general predictions going forward for this nucleus, the likes of which we have never seen.
Well, I think in this first year, Rick, I'm not even sure they'll get to 58, 55. I could see them being in the mid-50s because they're going to have the bullseye every night they play a game.
Yep.
You know, every team is going to get up for them. Every away game will be a sold-out arena with fans going ballistic, just ripping LeBron like he can't imagine. He's never seen the hostile environments he's going to see over the next year. I think this first year will be total learning curve. I think Pat Riley will be on the bench at some point. You know, I think this team will super underperform. I definitely don't think they're going to win the East next year. Just too many times they're going to have the bullseye on them when they go on the road. You know, and I don't see them matching the 40-1 record because teams will be up for, you know, the Cavs had. The teams will be up for them when they're playing in Miami as well. So, you know, I see this team. I think that certainly the Magic are still better than them. I can see them getting beat. The Celtics probably have one good season left in them. And as you said, you know, banging with the Hawks game after game, that's not going to be easy. When they do reach the finals, I think the earliest that would be in 2012. If Ron Artest is still a Laker, that's a disaster as well because right now he is the dirtiest, nastiest defender in the NBA. And, yeah, he can only shut down one of those guys, but Bosch isn't the kind of player that creates shots for himself anyway. So he's either got to be on, you know, D-Wade or LeBron. He's probably going to be on LeBron. And getting LeBron's head, too. I mean, Ron Artest can talk some crap. So, you know, I don't see that team being effective against an Artest-type player. Gasol might be a little soft, but, you know, I can see him tightening up, and Kobe will, you know, he'll peer when the time is right. So, you know, at earliest, the championship 2013, if they don't win two by 2014, Miami will be in for a wake-up call because these four guys will go running somewhere else probably since they've all got the opt-out in 4 years.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so I see a definite underperformance next year. It'll be fun to watch them lose.
I
feel that, and I think basketball fans everywhere feel that. You know, they're going to want to go watch them lose. Their team, the hype for that game will be unimaginable. For 41 road games, they'll have to deal with that type of hype and that type of, we want to beat this team worse than anybody. And, you know, I think they're going to win like 50 games. So we'll see. But
okay.
Might not even get to 50. I mean, no team has ever had this type of target. You know, even those Bulls teams, you know, they earned it. They earned their position. And Miami didn't earn anything. They went out and bought it.
That's true.
And, you know, fans don't like that. And we're going to, you know, LeBron will, like I said, he'll be facing hostile environments, the likes of which he couldn't fathom before he did this.
That is absolutely true. My last points on that, Number one, LeBron, one of the reasons he's taking a unanimous national pounding is that he doesn't have a constituency here. If he went to the Knicks, you'd at least have all the Vinny from Brooklyn's getting on the message boards, backing him up and everything like that. The Heat have no fans except for local front runners. And then the jock sniffers that are going to root for LeBron regardless of where he goes. But he has no constituency to defend himself against this national ball of rage that he has brought upon himself. That's my one point on this. My other one in looking at this is, we can call this the lockout of 2011. He just clinched the lockout next year because Mickey Arison, he's kind of got the Steinbrenner thing going now. R.I.P. George Steinbrenner, by the way. But anyways, Arison, he's playing by a different set of rules. He got over it. The other 28 owners at the meeting the other day were looking at Dan Gilbert going there, but for the grace of God, go I. Because we're in a league where the inmates are running the asylum. And I'll bring this full circle. We talked about before that all of us who were Cav fans, we were glad that Gilbert enabled this guy. And we enabled this guy. And we did. And it was the right thing to do because it's the world we live in. You have to play by the rules of the world you live in. It doesn't make you feel good to enable. And now we can vent our rage about having had to do it. But it was the smart percentage move. The owners want to get out from underneath a system where the inmates are running the asylum. There will be a lockout next year, and the players' union about to get humbled by the time this thing's all said and done, and they can thank LeBron James.